The Around the League Podcast. Didn't come here to make friends.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the League Podcast. I'm Greg Rosenthal, and I'm here with a couple of heroes in Culver City and a couple of heroes in New York. Chris Wessling, Kevin Patra, Dan Hansis, and Mark Sessler from a hotel room in Midtown Manhattan. What is happening?
Hey, Greg.
That was a crude facsimile of what a true open should be for the podcast.
Look, I don't need your backseat driving, Dan, from New York. I'm doing the best that I can, and I'm trying to bring the energy here because we are taping this after 1 in the morning East Coast time. We've been writing all day. Get excited.
Yes, it's very early in the morning in New York, but as I just tweeted, I am riding a contact high off Mark Sessler, who this is one of the greatest nights of his life. I can honestly say it. An amazing opening night of the NFL draft, and it's all about Johnny Football and the Cleveland Browns. And Mark's glowing. He's like a pregnant woman.
I do feel like a woman who is about to give birth.
Well,
accurate. I will say that for the last 40 minutes, Dan and I have been blasting Steve Winwood in our hotel room. Take from that what you will.
Hey, that's my entrance music.
It was partly done in honor of you, Wes, but also just like it felt like we needed some celebration music while we waited in this hotel room in Midtown Manhattan. And, you know, it was quite a trip being at Radio City for that, because we, you know, you tell us, Greg, how do you want to get into this? Because I have a lot of thoughts about the Manziel situation, because that, to me, seems like the big seismic move that we've been waiting for the Browns to make for 15 years, and they finally did it.
Well, Mark can't talk about it because you tweeted right after the trade that he floated out of the building.
It was immediately, a high-octane post was assigned to me, so I was clamped down typing in a seat that would have been better watching a film in. These seats at Radio City are just large, plush semi-couches. But I will say this. Wesley, and I think you tweeted this early, that it already in the first four picks or so, this year's draft had more drama than anything we saw a year ago, and that is exactly true. The Manziel beeline and the drop throughout till Cleveland picked him. Radio City was on fire tonight.
Well, Mark wasn't there when Eric Fisher went off the board in 2K13 and blew the roof.
Well,
Radio City.
It wasn't Fisher. It was the Fisher-Jokel combination and just trying to recover from that.
Three tackles in the first four picks. Get them now, boys.
Now, there's no other place to start than Johnny Manziel. What were you feeling, Mark, as Manziel was falling? You know, the Browns had already traded down in the first round to number 9. Then they moved back up to 8. Where are you at that point while they're on the clock at 8?
I did not. I was stunned that at that point they took a cornerback. I found that to be it was an interesting move by Farmer, but it brings me back to everything they said coming into this draft. They actually spoke the truth. They didn't want one of these quarterbacks at number 4, and at that point I thought it was a lost cause because someone else, especially Minnesota, I thought would swoop in and make this move. And I thought, well, you know what? They watched the tape. They're not into Johnny Football. And the fact that he came around to them, there was a lot of drama there because you're watching teams like the Eagles. Could he go there? And I thought if he goes past Philadelphia, would Cincinnati decide maybe to take him? And all these teams with
Cowboys.
Well, the Cowboys, of course. So all these teams with veterans in place decided not to rock their depth chart with that move. And so it was very dramatic how it played out.
And it was the, you know, I've gotten to go to the last 3 drafts. This is by far the best kind of vibe in the building because Manziel kind of hung over the whole thing. Once Clowney comes off the board at number 1, it was kind of like the Manziel show. And it's funny, when the Browns traded and then passed on him with the first pick, Mark was very downtrodden, but it was such an interesting draft that it wasn't over yet because every pick, it hung in the air who was going to take Manziel. And then when it came back to the Browns and they traded up with, it was the Eagles, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and on the Eagles thing, I found that to be the interesting footnote of the night, that the Chip Kelly situation in Cleveland was obviously egg on the face of that organization, and it really kind of cemented them as a laughing stock. And then, bang, it's through the Eagles that they, who I really thought that is a Chip Kelly type quarterback. That's how they get it done, by outbidding the Vikings. I don't know. It was ballsy. And Ray Fong, I think the winner of the night for me, and I'm saying this literally not as a Browns fan, but there was a lot of doubts and questions about if Ray Farmer was just a guy in there and Haslam was controlling the whole thing. I thought Ray Farmer did a nice job tonight.
Well, assuming he wanted Manziel.
Well, he picks up the first round and the fourth round pick from the Bills next year, too.
It's an unbelievable night for the Browns and their fans, and it makes me wonder, are they – I know it's early, but it's Manziel and whatever. Isn't this a team that could contend with Manziel right away?
Well, that's something that I – even though I got hung up with the Cowboys and it cost me a lot of sandwiches tonight, I feel okay with how it turned out, because I had Mr. Mike Mayock on my side. You know, he was still on the board at 16 when the Cowboys passed. But what I always felt from the start, personally, and I think obviously Mark was on the same page too, was that Manziel and the Browns were the perfect team. It was the perfect setup. And, you know, I just think that this is a situation that this franchise needed a seismic moment, a big move, and they made the move today.
You know, you talk about seismic movement. Mark and I have been following sports for over 30 years now, and there's one golden rule I've picked up. If you have a chance to get a uniquely gifted player who not only has the chance to alter the course of your franchise, but can also galvanize the whole area, the city, the state, you have to take a chance on that. This is what sports teams fail over and over again. And when you don't take a chance on that, you lose jobs. As Greg likes to say, great quarterbacks don't just transform franchises, they transform lives. Jobs are saved. You get a new addition on your house. You upgrade to a bigger house. Your GM stays in place for a few more years. This is the kind of move that could be.
And to that point,
that's the way I look at it, too. It's like, if you get the right quarterback, you can redo that foyer.
Well, no, to bolster that point, we found out 25 minutes after they drafted Manziel, the Browns had 200 new season tickets bought and 300 renewals. So that's 500 tickets sold in 25 minutes after he drafted him. And my question after that is, is that going to pressure them to start him? Because Patton said today he didn't have to start, but he's starting.
Yeah, he said
I don't disagree with that.
He said that after the draft, that it hasn't changed his mind that he doesn't want a rookie quarterback to start. So, yeah, good luck with that, Brian Hoyer. You're coming off a torn ACL. You have Johnny Football behind you. The whole town's going to want Manziel to play. I don't see how that's going to last for too long.
Vince Young can't catch a break, guys.
The collateral damage that is Johnny
Football. Part of the whole story, and we're not going to spend the whole show on Manziel, but we are going to be talking the whole offseason, the whole season about it. So I don't mind diving into it, is the Minnesota Vikings angle. I mean, all the teams that passed on Manziel, including the Browns, but there was only one team that wanted Manziel enough to trade back up for him, and that was Minnesota. R. Albert Breer reports that they tried to trade up to 22 and take Manziel there. And Jay Glazer also reports at one point they thought they had a deal done. So in that one moment when Ray Farmer, I mean, I guess it's out of the movie. I haven't seen the movie, but I mean, it's the drama of a movie. In that one moment where the Browns are calling and they have to top Minnesota's offer, everything changes. We could be talking about a depressed Mark Sessler right now, and all those season tickets could be going to Minnesota. And I think Minnesota recovered very well by getting Teddy Bridgewater. But, man, that is a franchise-altering, seismic phone call.
And think about that situation. Now you're going to have something we're going to be tracking the next couple of years, is how that all shook out. And the Vikings go and they do trade back into the first round, and then they get Teddy Bridgewater at 30. Johnny Manziel goes to the Browns at 22. So we're going to see how that works out for those two teams, and it'll always be a what-if game if one of the guys bombs and one of the guys does very well. I mean, it's really going to be fascinating to watch.
You don't think that Howie Roseman was the one that made the call to the Browns, knowing that they would want, hey, we have this, you have another first-round pick that we might rather trade there than get the second-rounder from the Vikings? I think it was the Eagles that might have been gone to the Browns and said, hey, by the way, we know you want Manziel, but we got the Vikings on the other line.
Well,
they want him, too.
It had to be a two-way street there. And the Eagles, who kind of, you know, they threw some things out there that they might be interested in. They trade down, and they end up taking a guy that no one except for Daniel Jeremiah has ever heard of, Marcus Smith, who no one had in the first round except for DJ. So kudos to DJ and kudos to Marcus Smith for somehow making it into this podcast.
You know, one thing, like Cleveland has, in recent history, used that 22nd pick to go quarterback. Brady Quinn, Brandon Whedon, two massive swing and misses. So they're hoping this one's a little bit different. And the reality is, when we look at the draft, we pick our winners tonight in mind and spirit. But reality is, a lot of people felt that Teddy Bridgewater was the more pro-ready quarterback. I think it's going to be very fascinating to see how it's good for Manziel that he went somewhere with a coordinator with some experience on how to use an unorthodox, as Wesley would say, uniquely gifted guy. I like the fit there. Had he gone to Minnesota with Norv Turner, I'm not sure that would have been – Norv Turner is an excellent offensive coordinator, but Shanahan's already shown that he can work with this type of player. So it's going to be fun to watch.
Hey, Norv worked with Doug Flutie.
You're right about that.
Jim Trotter did today say, though, that Norv didn't really like the Flutie's improvisation
Norv,
at the
Norv
time.
Norv usually has a prototypical pocket passer.
I can't believe that Mark is bringing up Whedon and Brady Quinn on the night that you got Manziel.
Yeah,
this is
got to be honest.
This
about
has got to be the closest thing to a playoff win in a long time. Just don't even bring harshing the buzz. I don't like it.
Well, by the way, the notorious DOP, Handsome Hank, shot down my Factory of Gladness headline on the NFL.com landing page,
tragedy,
which I had called weeks ago, and everyone in the building seemed to think it was a good one, and I was very proud of myself and excited. If I wasn't going to get sandwiches from the Cowboys, I was going to get that headline. Didn't get it.
Well,
what was the reasoning behind that?
I don't know.
Hank also shot down my suggestion that Dan and I would march out to a co-introductory song of Enya's Orinoco Flow.
Let's talk about what in most drafts would have been the biggest surprise and one of the biggest stories, and that's the Jacksonville Jaguars shocking a lot of people by taking Blake Bortles number 3. And this, in all the pre-draft speculation and rumors and buzz, I mean, almost every possibility is thrown out there and then, you know, disputed. I can't remember anyone saying Bortles to the Jaguars. And this is David Caldwell, their general manager, basically putting it out there. He's putting his job on the line saying, Bortles, I'm riding with Blake Bortles. That's my career.
This one kind of gives me the willies. I wouldn't be too excited. I don't know. When I saw comparisons in January and February of Blake Bortles to Blaine Gabbert.
No. There's also been comparisons to Ben Roethlisberger as well.
And Jake Locker.
And maybe there's a selling seats factor there. This is definitely not the name. Maybe they just didn't.
Nobody's buying tickets to see
Blaine.
Yeah,
no way.
He's Florida. He's a quarterback. I don't know.
I mean, it's not like they have a bad track record with guys with stupid names that start with B.
They have drafted 3 quarterbacks now in the top 10 in their franchise history. Byron Leftwich.
Ouch.
Blaine Gabbert, and here comes Blake Bortles. The difference between Bortles and Manziel and Bridgewater is, first of all, there's a little less pressure on the other two guys because they were taken later, although I don't think that ultimately matters that much. The bigger thing is the Browns and the Vikings have some talent on offense around it. You have Joe Thomas, and you have Jordan Cameron, and you have Josh Gordon for Manziel. And then in Minnesota, you have Adrian Peterson and Cordarrell Patterson and Kyle Rudolph and Greg Jennings aren't bad. And then you look at Jacksonville. That's not a situation where I feel like he's really set up to succeed, and they're going to have to play him right away.
A lot of pressure.
But are we also seeing Jacksonville as a team that's potentially going in the right direction? You know, this isn't to cite Blaine Gabbert again, a situation where he's going to a flatline franchise. There's some hope in Jacksonville as well.
Well, I'm trying to get rid of that hope.
It all rides, squash it. It all rides on Blake Bortles' shoulders now.
I can't believe you're dismissing Chad Henne.
They only
tragedy.
Did you know they've only drafted five players in the history of their franchise? Five quarterbacks in the history of their franchise?
Ooh.
Leftwich, Bortles, Gabbert, Rob Johnson, and Jonathan Quinn.
Ooh. I was going to throw out Quinn Gray, but I guess he wasn't drafted.
Not drafted.
So, I mean, Cecily, you're a big Caldwell and Gus Bradley believer. Does this change your feelings? Are you now going to root against Blake Bortles because he's essentially a competitor of Johnny Manziel in this rookie quarterback thing?
No, I'm not sure that that has a lot of traction with me. I mean, I found the pick odd as well, and I wonder if Jacksonville ultimately would like to, depending, you know, everyone says, oh, Gus Bradley is coming out of the Seattle system with nothing but those that the way that team was built in his mind. But I wonder if they want to be more of a run-heavy type offense. The one thing about Bortles is, and I think there's, you know, in terms of his size and his traits, there's a lot to like potentially, but they've talked about him a couple times as someone that is just not ready for the overall task of being a starting quarterback. He needs time. And so maybe when they talked about Henne, there was a half-truth that, A, we're obviously not sold on this guy. No one's buying that. But maybe do you feel like you really have to start Bortles right away? I wonder if that's the case. I mean, he is your number three pick, so.
I kind of agree with that. I'm not sure if they believe they have to right away. To go back to Greg's point, I'm not sure that Bortles has more pressure than Johnny Manziel. I don't really think so. I think with the person that Manziel is, I think he's putting pressure on himself.
Sure.
That's who we're talking about today. We're not, you know, Bortles was the second one. I think because of where Jacksonville is in relation to the histories of the two franchises, I think Johnny Manziel has much more pressure on him than Blake Bortles, who everyone could forget and nobody would go, nobody would worry about.
So those are the three quarterbacks that were taken, and Derek Carr still sitting on the board as we tape this going into day two. And we're going to get to our go get my lunch bet just a little bit later.
That last part was supposed to be implied.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I'm not really excited about revealing these standings. That'll give away at least my position in the stands. We'll talk about that later. But I think we should talk about the other biggest move of the day, which was the Bills trading up for Sammy Watkins. And like Mark Sessler said, man, Ray Farmer comes out looking good in this. He picks up Buffalo's first-round pick next year and their fourth-round pick. And Buffalo moves up only five spots to get Sammy Watkins. Maybe Stevie Johnson is on the trade block now. What do we think of this move?
It's a huge gamble. I mean, essentially, Doug Whaley saying, I think this guy's going to be the next Calvin Johnson, so I'm giving you my first rounder next year because I think he's the difference to get us getting to compete in the NFC East. I think that's what he's saying with what the trade that he made.
I'm not wild about it because I don't believe in EJ Manuel, but I guess credit to them for stacking their offense with as many weapons as possible. Because they believe in EJ Manuel, but like I said, I wouldn't give up the future, and they gave up a part of their future to bank on EJ Manuel.
Yeah, it's also like if Caldwell's one guy that suddenly he put his name up there is I'm attached to a player, and if this doesn't work out, I might not be in Jacksonville in a couple years from now. I see the same thing with the Bills here because this was an expensive, costly trade, and it's. If this doesn't work and E.J. Manuel continues to not thrill, that coach and that GM have a lot of explaining to do.
Well, one thing I'll say, though, about that, Wes, to your point that maybe it's tempered by the quarterback situation, let's say you're right, Wes, and you're feeling, and a lot of people feeling, that maybe E.J. Manuel is not the guy. He has a bad season. Maybe he gets hurt again. Maybe he gets benched, and they go down the tubes. They'll go and get a quarterback next year, and
they,
you have
not in the first round.
With young quarterback, this dynamic young wide receiver locked in for the next 4 years at least, and maybe even five. So it's not necessarily a win now situation. There,
yeah, they can pick up Chad Henne.
They can't get a quarterback in the first round next year because the Browns hold that pick.
Yeah, this
well,
isn't
that's a problem.
This isn't like the when the 49ers or the Saints give away a first round pick for next year, and you figure that's going to be in the mid-20s. This is the Bills.
This could be the fourth pick.
Right. This could be the Redskins trading away you know, their picks and it winds up being in the top two or something like that. I mean, the Bills have had no track record of success, and you know, it's a hard decision for me to understand to give up a pick that high for a wide receiver, especially, I mean, maybe you just feel like you need a guy that's going to be able to catch a pass that's 15 yards overthrown, and Sammy Watkins is the only guy that could possibly do that.
Wow.
It doesn't feel quite right to me that Cleveland Browns fans will be rooting hard for Buffalo Bills fans to be unhappy. You feel like those two fan bases should kind of have some solidarity. But if you're a Browns fan, you want the Bills to go down in flames, drop a 2-14 on them.
A lot of anti-EJ Manuel sentiment.
The hate's already started.
It's too bad because actually it is a moment that Bills fans – are going to get excited about. I mean, they are getting Sammy Watkins. They are getting what we all well, Wes disagreed. You thought Mike Evans was the best wide receiver in this class, but for the most part, people thought Watkins was one of the best wide receiver prospects in a while. And it is an exciting offense on paper. They have everything but the quarterback. I guess that's what I'm so frustrated about. If they just had a veteran, even a Michael Vick type, to go along with C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson and all of these receivers that have so much talent, and Cordy Glenn at left tackle, then you get excited, but it just almost doesn't all add up with EJ Manuel.
I was surprised because, and I guess it's just all smokescreen, but what the way Whaley talked about Evans, and I'm in Wes's camp in terms of seeing Evans as a guy that I like Evans more, and I thought that Whaley did too because he talked about him as a receiver that they don't have on that team, a dimension they don't have. Maybe what he was saying was, we never think Watkins will be there for us, but if we're going to trade up, it might be for Evans instead. But I was surprised at actually which wide receiver they picked.
All right, so now we've gone over the quarterbacks. We've gone over the big wide receiver trade. Maybe let's, I would say go around the room, but we're separated by an entire country right now. Let's just go around the group.
Go around America.
Let's go around America. And let's pick some of our favorite picks of the night, just the ones that struck your fancy and you liked them. Let's start with Kevin Patrick coming at you.
I'm going to go to the end of the first round. And I really like the Bradley Roby pick by the Broncos. I think he fills a need. I think at that spot
Roby.
Where they got him, I think it's a huge deal. He was talked about being one of the upper middle cornerbacks taken, and if it wasn't for an average year last year where he blown some coverage, I think he could be a difference maker a couple years down the road when they're looking to get rid of Tlaib's contract. I think that could be huge for them.
But let's be honest, a 52-year-old Reggie Roby would have been a more optimal selection at that point.
I like that move. Wait, is that who they took? I'm sorry.
My brother Phil lives in Columbus and is a huge Ohio State Buckeyes fan.
Oh.
He was just telling me the other day that Bradley Roby got toasted way too often last year. Dude, he was really good as a sophomore.
Right. If you looked at him,
but he
going
got burnt
before.
Quite a bit last year.
I thought you were going to say he was a Reggie Roby fan, or that he was Reggie Roby.
All the Wesleyans are Reggie Roby fans.
All right, let's go to New York for this next one. Mark, give me a pick you liked.
The pick I thought I liked the Raiders going with Khalil Mack. I mean, this is a guy that Greg Cosell said, A, best player in the draft, best defender. And the Raiders have used the offseason to add like 15 guys who are about to turn 40. So,
not
you know,
that there's
gotta,
anything wrong with that.
You've got to look beyond potentially 2016 and a roster that will have two people on it at that point for Oakland. So I like this guy. I think Mack is potentially a guy that you can anchor that defense around for the next 7-8 years. It's maybe one of the safer moves, and nice job by McKenzie.
Hey, Reggie McKenzie now has one blue chip player on his roster.
There you go.
You got to give him credit that he didn't go after an over 30 guy in the first round of the draft. I mean,
that's fair.
Brendan Weeden not in the draft.
No, it did work out well for them with Blake Bortles going 3, essentially that Mack fell further. I mean, a lot of people liked Mack over Clowney. You're right. If you look at that roster, they have no one that's just, hey, that's a franchise type of guy. And they got a guy, if Khalil Mack's in this draft last year, he probably goes number 1 overall.
Definitely. That's a classic move, too, in fantasy drafts, too, when you're kind of buried a little further back in the first round, and then some idiot takes Steven Jackson fourth overall, and it changes everything, and it puts you in play for somebody that you have no business being in play for. So good on you, Reggie.
Way to go, Raiders. Let's stick with you, Dan, then. Let's get a pick from you liked.
Well, first of all, I just want to tell you, Greg, I'm remarkably tired right now. I just want to put that out there.
Doesn't mean we're going to shorten this show up, if that's what you're trying to tell me, Sublimity. We're going 2 hours Eisen style tonight.
No, I liked a lot the Giants. I think they probably really wanted Eric Ebron, who went to the Lions at 10. That was another pick I liked. But they stuck to their plan, and I think it was important to them to not only show their belief in Eli, who they still believe can play despite that bad year. They go and they get Odell Beckham, a playmaker that allows you to not put so much pressure on Reuben Randall. So now you have a nice Beckham, Victor Cruz, Randall threesome there. And, well, let's say troika.
Dan is starting to fall apart here.
Yes, and I think that gives Eli a nice team to work with, and if Eli bombs out again with this supporting cast, then you really have to ask a lot of questions. So Hakeem Nicks has been successfully replaced in my mind, and I think that was an important move that the Giants need to make.
I don't know if Beckham is an outside the numbers receiver like Hakeem Nicks down the field. He's more of a guy who is explosive with the ball in his hands, cuts dynamically, kind of a different guy than Hakeem Nicks.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that really addresses the need they had.
I was surprised to see that wide receiver. I mean, I wasn't surprised that they passed on Johnny Manziel. Of all the random rumors that came today that just seemed so much like a smokescreen, that the Giants and Manziel seemed to really stick out. It was surprising to me that they went for receiver there, considering all their defensive needs.
Well, they filled a lot of those in free agency.
Hey, Dan, we're just trying to pick you apart.
I'm sorry, I'm getting cranky.
When Victor Cruz asks for a shiny toy, you give it to him.
I thought he asked for a big one, though.
That's true.
Not a 5'11".
You're right. Maybe the receiver they picked is a surprise, but you still listen when Victor Cruz talks.
He's a dancer, you know.
Wes, who you got?
I'm going with two different players here. One on offense.
Is that allowed?
One on defense.
That's cheating.
Nah, we can give a couple. Why not?
One on offense, one on defense, and both essentially reversed Father Time for their units. I love Ryan Shazier, the Ohio State linebacker, who I think looks like the fastest linebacker on film since Brian Urlacher came into the league as a safety wide receiver kick returner out of New Mexico. Shazier's awesome. You pair him with Lawrence Timmons. Now you have a linebacking core which had a lot of question marks last year. You have Worlds and Jones on the outside. Now you have arguably the most dynamic interior duo in the NFL with Bowman coming back from multiple knee surgery for the 49ers. Maybe the Steelers are up there. And then
all right,
New Orleans.
Easy there. Easy there.
That Steelers team is going down in week one, by the way.
I mean, you just said they might be better than Bowman and Willis, who have a chance to both make the Hall of Fame. Maybe.
Bowman playing on one leg now.
All right.
Yes. Okay. So, well, let's go to the Saints then. They had an aging wide receiver core. 63% of Drew Brees' completions last year went to tight ends and running backs. It was basically Marcus Colston and no one else. They pick up Brandon Cooks, the fastest wide receiver in the draft. Prototypical slot receiver. Plays a little bit like DeSean Jackson. Love this pick. He's kind of like Tavon Austin, except Sean Payton will know what to do with him, whereas Schottenheimer doesn't know what to do with Tavon Austin. Mm.
I do like him playing on that turf in that dome, too.
Yep.
That's perfect for him.
I don't know about Sean Payton's history of drafting receivers high, though. They haven't really found guys that are high-profile wide receivers. Devery Henderson was a high second-round pick. Robert Meacham was a first-round pick. And been able to integrate them into the offense.
I didn't like any of those players coming out.
Wow.
That's the difference. End of story.
They really need to find some players that are core young players because they've been kind of riding these same guys, Marcus Colston and Pierre Thomas, and Lance Moore is gone now, and just they haven't really found any of those diamonds in the rough or good new offensive pieces in a while. I'm going to roll.
I'm slightly concerned because Dan is falling asleep on my bed in my hotel room.
Really? What is the scene there? Is Steve Winwood still playing or –
Well, no, actually, it hasn't been all Wynwood. We actually listened to Draft Day by Drake, which Gold Standard, can you play a little clip of that?
Yeah, I'll play it right here.
Just giving instructions from across the country.
Yeah. Yeah. Draft Day, Johnny Manziel. 5 years later, how am I the man still? Draft Day.
Yeah. And, you know, we got into that a little bit. And then we went down a Wynwood wormhole. And then somehow we got to The Living Years by Mike and the Mechanics. And that got a little weird. And, you know, so it's just, it's kind of a weird vibe. But it makes sense because to circle back to the Johnny Manziel situation again, I was saying to Mark all week, Mark was acting very strange all week about this Manziel situation and was overthinking it, almost was maniacal in his behavior at times. And obsessive, and I just got the feeling that they were going to blow the pick, and that seemed to be in the air. They weren't going to get Manziel. They got him, so it's created this whole different like culture all around Mark. I feel like Mark's a different guy now, and I'm just basking in that. I'm really enjoying it. It's nice. As a Jets fan, my team drafted a defensive player in the first round for the 700th consecutive year, and I'm really excited to have a run-stuffing safety to help score points. In 2014, I'm really looking forward to see what he can do with Mike Vick and Geno Smith. But I kind of joke, Calvin Pryor makes that defense even better. But
you wanted Manziel. Don't even pretend.
That is a subplot, the Jets-Manziel vibe.
It would have been completely insane for the Jets to draft Johnny Manziel. But I wanted the Browns to have him all along. But it was something that I was... You know, it was almost he was such a unique character in this whole scene that it's so easy to get sucked in and to think about having that guy on your team and potentially transforming them. And we don't even know if that's actually going to happen with the Browns. But now the Browns have that chance. The Jets, it's been so long since the Jets had a potentially transcendent type athlete like that. So, yeah, you get sucked in when he's sitting on the board. But when I didn't hear his name, it's not like I was crestfallen because it made more sense. And if at Radio City, the Jets fans there, it was kind of like a mixture of relief and kind of sadness. But also it was, you know, it was too much. It was too much to imagine him with the Jets. The circus would have been back to town.
Well, there was palpable excitement that the Glacier had actually made the pick in time.
Got it. Got it in.
Well, he just got it in. They, you know, a lot of the teams that get the pick in with a well over 2 minutes to go. The Glacier took it down because the Glacier doesn't make a decision until the Glacier decides it's the right time.
Well, when you're watching Michael Vick, you know, lead the Jets to a stirring comeback over the Bills to get the Jets record to 5-7, you can be happy and think, hey, that's the guy that we passed on Johnny Manziel for. 1 year of Michael Vick.
I do look forward to the first time Sammy Watkins goes over the middle and Calvin Pryor de-cleats him and you never see the same Sammy Watkins ever again. I am looking forward to that.
I'm going to give my favorite pick of the rounds to the St. Louis Rams, even though I wanted them to take a quarterback because I just think they're sticking with Sam Bradford too long. Ultimately, you have to like the team they're putting together with Aaron Donald on that defensive line. Donald, Michael Brockers, Robert Quinn, and Chris Long is the most insane pass rush defensive line in the league right now. And then you add Robinson to their offensive line. This should be a good running attack. Wes is making a face over there.
I hated their draft. I'm going to take them to task.
Why?
Well, we talked about passing on uniquely gifted players that can change the course of their franchise. They wanted no part of RG3, who won Rookie of the Year, galvanized the Redskins organization, got that fan base excited. Twice they pass up on Johnny Manziel. They stick with Sam Bradford, who I think might be the least inspiring quarterback in the NFL, has an 18-30-1 record in 4 years as a starter, has not gotten one bit better, and looks to me like he's regressed. They pick up Aaron Donald. They have Michael Brockers, who they drafted in the top 10. They have Kendall Langford, who is a really good defensive tackle. Right. They right. sign Alex Carrington as a free agent. They have three defensive tackles right there.
I like
they
building...
don't need Aaron Donald.
I like building.
They need a quarterback.
I like building strength on strength. Who's going to stop that team now?
Well,
since you don't have any quarterback, you can just put like 22 defensive players on the field.
I'm sure for those 7.4 snaps a game that Aaron Donald plays, he'll make a great impact. What are
wow.
you doing, Rams? Come on.
Jeez.
Well, that
was weird over there.
I didn't really care about that.
I don't want to watch Sam Bradford play for the Rams again. In that ugly dome, watching that guy overthrow his receivers, time of, come on.
I love it. Wesleyan right now, A, he's speaking my language. This is just a C poem about the Rams, and I agree with every word of it.
And how about the Rams? If nothing else, they win the award for the most off-the-record lies of any team. I mean, what team pretends that they're more media-friendly and is ultimately snowballing all their buddies in the media more than the Rams? Because all this Manziel stuff and the whispers, oh, yeah, they really liked it. It was like a month-long campaign to the point just about everyone was on board that this was legitimate. And not only do they pass him up at 2, but they pass him up at 13. And then we get the reasoning, wow, they just didn't think Aaron Donald would be there. Like, you can't pass that up. We're going to, like, we like Johnny Manziel as our franchise quarterback, but since we didn't see Aaron Donald falling to the 13th pick, guess we can't take him.
How many defensive linemen do you need?
And by the way, a message to Mr. High Cheekbones and flowing sandy hair, the general manager of that team, Les Snead. You better have gotten this right, man, because I don't think he gets any chances if they stay in neutral here after passing up all this like amazing talent at the top of this draft and going down a path that Wes seems to be of one to ruin. If he's wrong, he's not going to get another draft to and not only will
well,
he not
crazy.
Get another draft to do this, and he'll be elsewhere or on the street. The Rams will have botched one of the great golden opportunities of any NFL team has had in the last decade from that bounty they got for RG3. They got this better work out.
That's more half-baked than me giving the Rams some love. I mean, they were coming off the worst, literally the worst five-year run in NFL history, and they've won 14 games the last 2 years. Les Snead's going to be there for a long time. Doesn't really matter what they do this year. There's no.
Oh, it matters.
It matters.
Greg,
that's silly.
Greg, your pick has not been widely popular with this group, but
no, I don't even like it. I don't even buy it. I totally back off it. I'm not even kidding. I made it up. I'm
running away from
it. For you. There have been 22 men in NFL draft history that have been drafted with a combination of two first names in their name, Aaron Donald being one of them. None of them have lasted more than 3 years.
Just making things up.
Nolan Ryan had a pretty good career in Major League Baseball.
Well, since
that's a sport that does not move the needle on this podcast.
Mark has officially put me to sleep.
I just put a hex on the Rams. They are doomed to go 7-9 every single year for the rest of eternity.
I think they would sign up for that.
Seahawks.
They would sign up for
that,
yeah.
Yeah, now we're at the portion of the program where Mark is only speaking in lies. I think it's time to go over the go get my lunch tote board, scoreboard.
Keep that implied.
All right. It's an embarrassment. And I just want to thank our Twitter follower, who keeps sending us all the updates. Actually, there's multiple. Tristan keeps sending us updates. And then also we have a Twitter account that is now keeping track of our scoreboard as it's going. So if you guys are listening to this podcast and you want to follow along.
There is a Twitter handle called Go Get My Lunch.
Exactly. It's beautiful. And
we don't know who runs it.
And not only that, he signed up for a Gmail account to email me the standing so I would have him for the podcast in a Microsoft Word form. So I'm excited.
I love our listeners, by the way. They are
fantastic.
Awesome.
Great humans across the board. I don't even need to do any more background checking. They listen to the show, and they interact with us on social media, and that's good enough for me.
It really is incredible how many people were following along, and we loved that you guys were really into when Johnny Manziel was on the clock, could Hansis do the unbelievable and pick up seven sandwiches at one moment. It really did raise a lot of tension in the room. I was more excited. What did you say on Twitter or on over instant message, Dan?
I have no idea. That was like 17 hours ago. It's 2 in the morning here, Greg.
I think you said that it was the most exciting moment you've ever had in your life by far.
That sounds right, and I will tell you that, yeah, I mean, it was something that it almost happened. I'm okay with how it played out, and my good buddy Mark got the player anyway. So you know what? Even though I didn't win my seven sandwiches, I'm okay with how it played out.
Wait, under the radar here, NFL draft guru Mike Mayock now taking tips from Dan Hansis for his mock draft. That's a victory.
He shouldn't, because it didn't work out in this case.
One Twitter follower told me that exciting night of draft, the best part for him that he's ever had in a draft, even though Dan's prediction didn't come true, was how much tension there was leading up to the Cowboys pick, purely because of Dan's prediction.
And don't forget about this. Just, you know, and I didn't get it right, so I cannot gloat, but you know, I was laughed out of the room when I even suggested that Manziel would be on the board at 16. Mark is pointing at himself and shaking his head. Mark, all right, maybe you weren't, but some of the other gentlemen, some of the other heroes, you didn't think it could even be plausible
that
Manziel would be an option.
I still don't.
I don't think he was an option.
I don't think he was an option. No credit.
You guys thought he would be like the number one pick in the NFL, it seemed like, when we were discussing this.
I like how we've turned this into you being right.
Somehow.
No, the glory of this whole sandwich conversation needs to go to Wessling, who it doesn't have to pay for a meal for roughly the next 7 years.
Yeah, that's right. Chris Wessling somehow made out with six sandwiches on Thursday night. Although, this is to be continued. We still have a couple sandwich propositions that are hanging for the next couple days. So it really doesn't matter what you are after day one. It's what you are after 3 days. But you're feeling pretty good.
I can't hear you under the sound of this sandwich avalanche.
It's
wow.
That was awful. That was just terrible.
Wait, how long were you practicing that line?
2 hours.
I picture you like in one of the bathrooms at the office, just saying it over and over again in the mirror.
I picture me like Scrooge McDuck diving through piles of money, except there's sandwiches.
I'm glad.
Wesley, don't
I hope you don't eat them after you dive
the fact
into
that Greg's daughter will not eat, nor will my son's or Dan's child, which is yet to be born.
Well, the unborn child is
will not
very
eat
upset about this.
While you just, you know, continually hoarding shovel sandwiches. $14 sandwiches in your mouth. Have a nice day.
Contraptions, even.
I'm glad it was Wessling, though, because Dan would have been number one in my power rankings for most insufferable if he led the
I
scoreboard.
Would have been
You're insufferable
the
now,
worst.
And you did poorly.
I would have been the absolute worst. I would have even hated myself. So it really works out ultimately because I didn't, you know,
and
I couldn't. I would not have been able to handle that level of success.
And the person that I would most want to do well in this competition did quite well, and that's Mark Sessler, who is up three sandwiches right now, and that's good news for the rest of us because, A, Mark doesn't like sandwiches, B, he doesn't like food or meat. So this, I don't know what's really going to be a part of this. We'll just give you like some fries or
olives,
a slice of bread. What are you going to have, Mark?
I'm going to order multiple boxes of white rice from like a local Chinese house.
High-octane wonton soup.
That's pretty much what Mark eats. And you know it was a key.
Sounds
and it,
awful.
And it just makes it all the more sweet. Because it's not like Mark picked any good propositions. He had Teddy Bridgewater not getting drafted in the first round. Was wrong on that. Wes was smart to take that sandwich. He had Bortles to the Vikings and the Browns drafting Derek Carr, where he lost three sandwiches. But the key was that he picked Johnny Manziel. He hedged his bets with these two things. Going to the Browns. So not only did it make your world, but you get some sandwiches for it, too.
Well, and I've been a fan of John Schneider and Pete Carroll, but they are off my list after allowing the Vikings to sneak back into the first round.
One of the greatest things in the newsroom was that last pick when it got traded. Greg just went from elated to like, you have got to be kidding me.
Well, Greg lost a lot of sandwiches on that one.
I had sandwiches riding on that only two quarterbacks would get taken in the first round, and we got to pick 32, and the Seahawks were on the clock, and then we hear that the Vikings traded up and it was all over. And this is how Wes cleaned up. He got sandwiches for me and Mark on this one, so that really hurt. I am down 4 sandwiches. I am in last place. Dan is down 3 sandwiches. Bad job by him. And the gold standard, who stupidly dipped his toe into the big kid pool.
Wow.
Lost his only 2 sandwiches possible. Hello, gold standard.
How's it going?
Sorry, I think it's because my back is to you. I haven't interacted
That's all
like
right.
a good host
no,
like Dan would have.
I didn't want to dip
well,
my toes into the big kid
with gold
pool.
Standard.
Appreciate it.
So side note on gold standard, by the way, I had 2 young women that seemed to be under the age of 25 that came up to our area of the room and asked about him specifically.
That's nice. A dirty lie. Your track record of lying is off the charts.
I thought that lying season was over now.
All right, that just about wraps up. Do we have any other final thoughts we want to throw out there? Any picks that caught you that you didn't like, or just moments, or should we just let poor Mark and Dan get to bed?
We should talk about one last thing. We haven't said a word about the first pick in the entire draft.
Who?
Jadeveon Clowney.
Jadeveon Clowney.
Jadeveon.
Let's go with his real name from now on.
Sure.
I like it.
If you say so.
Yeah, do it.
Texans pass up a quarterback, but they get Clowney to pair with J.J. Watt. That's going to be knocking around some pretty bad AFC South quarterbacks.
I like it. And they have the first pick in the draft tomorrow. David Carr sitting there, somebody like that. They could take the quarterback similar to kind of how the Chargers reformed their franchise in 2001 with Drew Brees taking the second round after getting LT in the first.
Ooh. Yeah, and that always works out well, taking a Carr in Houston. Way
Do
to
we
go.
All agree well, that Carr oh, is a different guy. Bill O'Brien-type quarterback and the best remaining guy?
He's also the second best Carr in his family, the first one being the biggest quarterback bust in franchise history.
Yeah, I don't think there's – that would be so delicious if they took Derek Carr. But it sounds like there's a good chance they will trade – for Ryan Mallett, and that would presumably stop them from taking a quarterback that high. Maybe they would still take one in the third or the fourth round, but if they traded for Mallett, and supposedly it was going to be for a third-round pick maybe next year, I would guess.
That would be awesome if they had 4 backup quarterbacks on their roster.
Dan, don't try to sigh so loudly that we let you off the hook.
Dan, I am watching this in live living color, and Dan is not in good shape right now.
It's Operation Shutdown, fellas.
Derek Bell, thanks.
It's 2 in the morning. The only difference right now is that you would be at the bar drinking at 2 in the morning instead.
Well, I guess you do have a point there. But I do believe that Mark and I have pulled the early shift on Around the League tomorrow, so we're going to be upwriting high-octane content, and I just want to get my shut-eye ahead of that penciling moment in my life.
I am looking forward to everything you do, and thank you guys for staying up late with us, and congratulations to Mark. We're going to do winners and losers on the site after Friday and Saturday's rounds, but let's just be honest. Mark Sessler is the big winner of the 2014 draft.
To borrow a George Bush line, way to go, Brownie.
Who's the big winner? Marky wins.
On that note, for the gold standard and Chris Wesseling, Kevin Patra, I'm not doing the nicknames, Dan Hansis, Mark Sessler,
brutal.
I'm Greg Rosenthal. We will be back on Saturday night to wrap up the entire draft, so check in with us then. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, draft day. Johnny Manziel, 5 years later, how am I the man still? Draft day, A. Wiggins, that other side, you stay winning. Oh, man, you know I had to do it for you. You know I had to do it for you.